Blog Talk Radio.
For joining us here for another episode of The Right Way here on Blog Talk Radio, produced by Backsports Page. I am your host, Malik Wright, here with my co-host, Austin Mayo.
How's it going, everybody? We are really excited to be back on the air again, and really excited also because we're going to be talking not only NFL news, but we're going to be talking some fantasy football and as well as some NBA action this week. So I'm really excited for the show, Malik.
Absolutely. You guys heard it right. We'll be talking NBA. So we're playing back. I probably shouldn't sing. But anyway.
It's a good song.
Yeah, it is. I don't want to butcher it. We're going to get started right away talking with Colin Kaepernick requesting a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. What's going on there? Austin, I'm going to let you dish first.
All right. So here's the deal with Colin Kaepernick. After Chip Kelly was announced that he would be coaching the 49ers this upcoming season. Many, and including both of us, Malik, thought this would be a good thing for Colin Kaepernick, as he is a running quarterback. He does have a strong arm, but maybe he could run that read option. We saw some success with that under even Harbaugh's regime. But right now, we're seeing like multiple media angles suggesting that maybe Kaepernick does not want to be there. At first, it was rumored that he wanted to play for the New York Jets. But trade rumors are circulating. We know that he may be requesting a trade, although the 49ers owner, Mr. York, is still hesitating on that issue, so we don't really know just that. But Malik, here's what I want to say. Colin Kaepernick, coming off a very, very poor season in 2015, he played 9 games, only started in 8 of them. He was 35th, and this is among all qualifying quarterbacks, 35th in touchdowns, 28th in QBR, 34th in yards, and he only had 6 passing touchdowns. So what do you think, even if they would trade him, is there any trade value there? And where do you think Colin Kaepernick will be playing football this season?
Well, it's funny that you should ask this. Me personally, I think there is a trade value there for Colin Kaepernick of some sort, maybe like a 4th-round pick, a 3rd-round pick, something like that around there. But you're not going to get any you're not going to get a high pick for this guy. I mean, he's not going to wow you, but where I have a problem with Colin Kaepernick is, Colin Kaepernick, you were selected, okay? You were selected by the San Francisco 49ers organization, which is one of the most legendary organizations in football, might I add. You were selected to be their franchise quarterback. The only real 2 known franchise quarterbacks in 49ers history was the great Joe Montana and Steve Young. So they chose you to be, I mean, they obviously saw something in you that will put you in that same category. Now, the reason why I say that is because the San Francisco 49ers, they don't go out and just select anybody to be their franchise quarterback, you know? And I think for an organization that is that legendary to go out and select you and you just basically bail on them for whatever reason, I mean, it's pretty sad. But me personally, I think Colin Kaepernick, I can't see a team taking on that huge, you know, that huge salary cap. I really can't see another team, you know, trading for him. I mean, the Browns have already left the discussion. They said they don't want him. So, I mean, who's really out there that's going to put out that big money for Colin Kaepernick? And we're not talking about like a good quarterback. We're talking about an okay quarterback, in my eyes at least. I mean, obviously he has some type of big play, in his arsenal, but I don't really look at him as a quarterback like that's going to wow people. He's not like the Russell Wilsons of the world or the Cam Newton. You know, he's not. He doesn't have the same trade value as them. I mean, maybe at one point when he had that breakout year when he took the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl, but other than that, what has the guy done?
And Malik, let me ask you this. You know, there's two sides to this. One, what do the 49ers see in him? And if they don't see much, maybe they should trade him. But from Kaepernick's perspective, look at who he's really working with. He has Carlos Hyde at running back, was injured. His wide receiving depth is a joke. But after Anquan Boldin, it's a bunch of no-names trying to put Torrey Smith in, trying to rejuvenize his career. They don't have Vernon Davis anymore. I mean, like, to a degree, him saying he wants to play for the New York Jets, well, maybe because they have receivers, or maybe any other team for that matter, they have receivers that he feel he could actually benefit from instead of having to carry the load of the team.
Well, they don't even have Anquan Boldin anymore. Anquan Boldin's contract was voided a week and a half ago by the San Francisco 49ers. They decided they aren't going to bring him back. So with that being said, I mean, it does not matter. You're a franchise quarterback. You were selected to be a franchise quarterback. Therefore, when going gets tough, you got to stick it out with the team. Why? Because you are the glue of the franchise. Me personally, I think it comes down to this. Colin Kaepernick was a hardball guy, okay? He was a hardball guy, and when Harbaugh left to go to be the head coach of Michigan, it put him in a flux, in a sense. So now he's in a situation now where it's like, you know, his turmoil at the head coaching position, you know, people are, you know, like I said before, players talk, and, you know, I really think Colin Kaepernick spoke to other players and, you know, especially players who played in Philadelphia under Chip Kelly, and I really think, you know, this guy is rubbing him the wrong way. So I think when you look at it, I think Colin Kaepernick is not even giving the guy Chip Kelly a chance. I really don't know. This situation is very, very, very it's going to be very interesting, to say the least, in the next upcoming week to see exactly what happens. So, I mean, that we'll see what happens. But let's switch gears here. Let's talk about Sam Bradford. I mean, the Eagles want to sign him to a multi-million-dollar deal. What do you think?
Well, I think it's important to understand, much like with Colin Kaepernick, you have to understand what the philosophy of the new head coach is going to be and what kind of system are they going to run. And the thing is with Sam Bradford, I don't really see a system that he runs effectively. He didn't really run the pro-style offense, you know, single running back, tight end, two wide receivers, that type of offense. He didn't run it particularly well in St. Louis. He comes to Philadelphia and tries to run a high up-tempo offense, and he struggled last year. He went 33rd in QBR, 22nd in touchdowns, 18th in yards, 26th in overall rating among qualifying quarterbacks, and he played almost a full season. And then you're looking at this and you're like, so what offense does this guy fit into? So for me, it's more about I want to know where Philadelphia wants where their offense should be. And personally, if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm not necessarily doubting the capabilities of running the up-tempo offense. I don't think that Chip Kelly's philosophy was necessarily wrong. I think you had the wrong personnel there. And I don't think Sam Bradford was able to run that offense. Personally, if I'm an Eagles fan, I don't want to see a multi-year deal to Sam Bradford. If anything, I want to see them going out and signing a veteran quarterback. And I know this may seem harsh to some people, but Michael Vick is available. What's the harm in him coming in as a backup quarterback to at least have someone there stable that you know can control this offense? And if they were to stay with the high-tempo offense, there are a ton of quarterbacks in this year's draft, such as Dak Prescott, out of Texas A&M, and other guys of that sort that can run that high-tempo offense. I think the Eagles, to a degree, have the capabilities if perhaps they do trade DeMarco Murray and they get other people. But I don't see, no matter what offense they run, I don't see the potential in Sam Bradford. The statistics don't back him up as being anything more than a mediocre quarterback. But no matter what offense the Eagles have to run, if they choose to go with Bradford, they better mix it up to a degree. Because right now, both in a pro-style offense and a sped-up offense, Sam Bradford doesn't really meet that NFL standard. What's your take on that, Malik?
Wait, I got to go back. Did you just say Michael Vick is available?
Mm-hmm. Free agent, free agent.
But why would they want him back? The guy's turnover prone. He's injury prone. That's what he does. He's not the same Michael Vick. He's not even useless as a backup anymore. He's a third stringer at best now.
I'm going to have to disagree, because if they're running that high-tempo offense, then
they're not
going to
do this under
Michael.
They're not going to do this under new head coach Doug Pederson. Doug Pederson. If you look at what the Kansas City Chiefs did when he was offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, what they're going to do is they're going to dink and dunk and take their yardage. That's what they're going to do. They're not going to do anything spectacular now that, you know, they're not going to change. They're not going to stick to the Chip Kelly, you know, high tempo of offense now that, you know, Doug Pederson is the coach. He's going to bring his own, you know, bring his own playbook in there, and they're going to master that. But there's no way that they're going to stick with the Chip Kelly playbook. I mean, and I don't think that it should even be a concern. I think what it comes down to is Sam Bradford's health. I think, is this guy going to be reliable for the future? That's what it comes down to. It has nothing to do with the type of offense they run, the style of play. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with his health and his ability to be an NFL quarterback. That's what it comes down to. And, if you ask me, personally, I think if I was an Eagles fan, you look at the options that are out there right now. If we're not talking RG3, who are we talking? There's nobody really out there that we could talk. I mean, I heard whispers and murmurs of, you know, possibly them going after Chase Daniel, the backup quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, who Doug Pederson really, 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 really liked. But, I mean, who are we talking about? Who? I mean, I think our best bet, if I'm an Eagles fan, if we're not going after Robert Griffin III, I think we need to stick with Sam Bradford to see what he got. I'm not saying a multi-million dollar deal, but I am saying maybe a 2-year deal at best. Just to see what the guy got, what the guy has.
Do you see them drafting a quarterback by any means? Do you see Sam Bradford, somewhat of an established quarterback, going into this next season will be his sixth season in the NFL? Do you see any potential in perhaps drafting a quarterback, signing Bradford to say a 2 or 3 year deal, having that quarterback work under Bradford? See how Pederson and that offense can perhaps train this new quarterback, this young quarterback, and maybe the Eagles will have some sort of a future in the next 3, 4, 5 years.
I think what I can see the Philadelphia Eagles and Doug Pederson doing, I could see them signing Sam Bradford, but mind you, this all is pending if Sam Bradford wants to re-sign with the Eagles, obviously, and, you know, there were reports at the beginning of the offseason that he didn't want to, but if he makes the decision to stay with the Philadelphia Eagles, because I think that's the only team that's interested in him as a starting quarterback currently, I think he signs with them, and I think the Eagles don't draft a quarterback, but I think they make a play at Chase Daniel and they bring him in to be his backup. I could see them doing that.
Okay. I think that's fair either way. Now, Malik, our final question, if we want to talk about this now, is DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray, another Eagle, but reports are a little different with DeMarco Murray, because with him, it's not about him re-signing with the Eagles. It's actually quite the opposite. It's him having any trade value and seeing where he wants to go. And here's the breakdown for DeMarco Murray. He was paid $9 million this season alone. He's scheduled to make $7 million in base salary this year, but only $2 million in 2017. So there is some trade value if he could get off the books for Philadelphia, specifically getting off the books by 2017, and then with the new salary cap expansion, perhaps this would be beneficial for the Eagles to get him off the books. So my question is, DeMarco Murray, looking towards the Dallas Cowboys, do you think a trade will get done, and do you think a trade could get done in this offseason so that in 2016 DeMarco Murray could be the starting running back for the Dallas Cowboys, just like he was dominant in 2014?
I'm not going to say he'll be that dominant, but I definitely think a trade can happen. I think a trade can happen, and I believe a trade will happen for DeMarco Murray. But then again, there would have to be some serious suitors out there for DeMarco Murray. Now, me, I'm a big fan of cutting a guy loose. If a guy does not want to be on your football team, then you know he's not helping the cause. You know, I really believe that players are not. That means he will never play to his full potential on your football team, under your regime. He won't, because it's not a place that he wants to be. For DeMarco Murray, I think it's essential for the Philadelphia Eagles to get him out of Philadelphia as soon as possible, because the guy is a cancer to the locker room, because he does not want to be there. That I really think that. I mean, I don't know if the Philadelphia Eagles and Jeff Lurie are willing to, you know, give him back to the Cowboys necessarily. But, I mean, because, you know, they're a division rival, but you got to do something with the guy. If it was me, I mean, if that's the only team that's actually you know, in serious pursuit of DeMarco Murray, I would trade him to the Dallas Cowboys, but he would come at a hefty price. And when I mean a hefty price, I mean a first-round pick. A first-round pick and at least a next year's second-round pick for DeMarco Murray. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. But, ladies and gentlemen, right now I'm going to introduce you guys to our up-and-coming fantasy expert, Michael Piccarelli. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
How are you, Malik? Austin, how's it going?
Hi, Mike. Glad for you to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much, fellas, for the opportunity. I'm real happy to be here, and fantasy football season can't get here fast enough. I'm just waiting for the summer to hit so we can start studying.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, the NFL season just ended, Mike, so, you know, I can't let you go without, you know, asking you some football questions. What did you take away from this past season? What was the biggest shock to you?
Oh man, fantasy wise or just overall NFL?
Either or is perfect.
A couple guys fantasy wise. I think the Atlanta Falcons surprised me just a little bit. You know, going 5-0 and then kind of really not doing well from there on. I thought Devontae Freeman was somebody that was a little under most people's radar. Who obviously, you know, paid huge dividends. I thought one of my guys was Tim Hightower. I signed Hightower late, and oh my goodness, he was the equivalent to Odell Beckham for me last year. He had 20-point seasons, I think, in two out of the last 3 weeks for a guy that was signed. You know, he wasn't even drafted, so he basically was free. As far as the season, I mean. Gosh, the Panthers were a little bit of a surprise.
Definitely.
I thought it was a great Super Bowl. It was very entertaining. Defense wins championships, man. And anytime anybody ever tells you different, defense wins championships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that you know, that definitely was the case this year. And even 2 years ago, that was the case as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Everyone talks about the Patriots. That Malcolm Butler play was the play of the game, if not the year, if not a really long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Mike, I got a question for you, more of a fantasy type question for you. So I was extremely unlucky in this year's draft. I went Le'Veon Bell, and I was somehow able to get Jamaal Charles in the second round in that same draft. And unfortunately, I lost both of them at the beginning of the season. Now, for guys, I know it's a long time away, but if you could pick either Le'Veon Bell or Jamaal Charles, let's say you have the first overall pick or any pick, but you have the opportunity to get one of those two guys, would you go Le'Veon Bell, who's more of a dynamic running back, but yet he still has to play under Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger, or would you go with Jamaal Charles? He runs the Kansas City Chiefs, but they lost some of their coaching staff. You don't know how their quarterback's going to be next year. There's a lot of news up in the air with them. So which one would you go out of the two?
Well, actually, a two-part answer, Austin. It's a good question. Jamaal Charles, I'm not even 100% sure that he'll be back. I'm sure he's got a guaranteed cap number like a lot of other guys, a big injury history, and more than anything else, a very very good backups. Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West seem to, you know, not be the reason why the Chiefs didn't advance. I mean, they ran the ball pretty well. I think it's comparable competition to D'Angelo Williams and Lev Bell. Either way, I would most certainly handcuff my guys, and that's the biggest, Malik, the biggest lesson I learned from fantasy football in 2015 was after the bye weeks, get your backups. If you think about guys like Jeremy Langford from the Bears, if you think about the Chiefs backups, obviously the Saints, there were those guys.
Cardinals.
Exactly. David Johnson's another one. But those guys were all cheap and you know, basically, a lot of them were undrafted. In 10, 12-man leagues, a lot of them guys were undrafted. So after your bye weeks, cut everybody, get your backups, and just, you know, go at it. To answer your question, Austin, Lev Bell or Jamaal Charles. Assuming Jamaal Charles is on the Chiefs, you know what? play to win, man. Take Lev Bell. I think his upside is better. I think if they both have their best seasons, Lev Bell's season is better than Jamaal Charles' best season. Not by a lot, but that's my answer. I'm sorry, Malik. I know that's an interdivision. Some feelings there for you.
Absolutely. absolutely. Okay, so my advice to you fantasy players out there, and I'm a former fantasy champion, might I add. I actually retired for a season, but I'm coming back this year. And if I was playing fantasy football this year, I would start Le'Veon, and I had Le'Veon Bell. I would have started him against every team other than the Cincinnati Bengals. Because when he plays the Cincinnati Bengals, he struggles. And it's just that simple. I mean, maybe that's not all true, but I'd like to think that. So
Go ahead.
Wait, what were you going to say?
I was going to say the Bengals defense gives running backs a reason to not produce like themselves. The Bengals have a real tough defense. Austin, I don't know if you were referring to who I would take number one overall, but for next year, I think wide receivers are going to be really hot. I think you can argue the top three.
Go ahead. Oh, no, what I'm saying is I have to agree with you on that one simply because Antonio Brown's breakout year and then also Odell, and especially since this year you're seeing a lot of, like, the wide receivers that were taken over the years, guys like Marcus Colston, Larry Fitzgerald, you don't know where their careers are going and if they're going to be playing next year. I think the value of having a young number one wide receiver like an Odell, like an Antonio Brown is going to be a lot more significant. And with this year especially, running backs are disposable. These backups are having just as much value. D'Angelo Williams came in and performed as if he was a top five running back all of a sudden. And at the same time, you saw what I think the most common mistake made in this year's drafts just over across all of United States Fantasy Football League had to be C.J. Anderson and his pick. A lot of people were ranking him as a top five, top ten even running back, and he did not perform to that at all. So I agree with you on this one. I think getting a young wide receiver in the top five is probably more valuable than getting a running back because at the end of the day, you don't know what their health, if they're even going to come back or even play a full season.
Yeah, there's not very many undisputed number one running back today on, you know, March 1st. I mean, you know, you ask five guys, you can get five different answers. People will tell you Todd Gurley's the number one, but who the heck knows what Los Angeles' offense is going to look like. Obviously, Adrian Peterson might not be that guy anymore. And like I said, you know, Lev Bell, there's enormous question marks. So in addition to, you know, to the wide receivers coming out hot and heavy, just like every year, it's going to be as challenging as ever.
Absolutely. I have a quick question to ask you, and then Austin could ask you any more questions he has. And this is a question I've gotten very frequently. Other than Gronkowski, okay, Mike? Other than Gronkowski, who would you say is the next top tight end, you know, in the NFL that should be, you know, should go drafted in fantasy football this year? It's a good question.
Oh gosh, there's an enormous drop off. I did have Gronkowski this year in my main league. I mean, I participate in a few leagues. But my main league, I've been in it for over 10 years. It's 12 guys. I had Gronkowski last year and this year. So it's going to be really tough for me to handle that question because I haven't studied other tight ends in a good couple of years. Obviously, Jimmy Graham's drop-off was a little surprising. I mean, he went from the one of the worst offenses to the best and all that business. I mean, people like Kelce coming on, but there's just something about Alex Smith that wouldn't make me say that Kelce's the number two overall. Obviously, Greg Olsen is up there. But there's like I said, there's a big drop-off. I know your man, Tyler Eifert, had a great year. If he can keep that up, maybe if Marvin Jones leaves, that'll open up some more opportunities for him, which might close that gap a little bit. So
It'll definitely be interesting. I had to sneak that in there really quickly.
I knew you were just waiting for him to say Tyler Eifert. There was no doubt.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If he didn't say, you were just going to be like, "And Michael, I think you're missing one person." But anyway, my final question has to be the quarterback position. So years ago, the quarterback almost always seen as a number one pick, but now you don't see many quarterbacks even taken in the first round, especially with the value of having like a tight end like Gronkowski and then the drop-off afterwards, or even with running backs and wide receivers. So Brady comes to mind, Cam Newton comes to mind, and there's no Peyton Manning this year. So outside of Brady and Cam Newton, who do you think is the next quarterback taken? Is Aaron Rodgers the next guy, or is there maybe someone that is expanding, or maybe a young guy that we haven't seen in previous years be drafted so high up for the quarterback position?
For me, Austin, there isn't one. I haven't drafted a quarterback in the first eight rounds in quite some time. To me, like you said, you know, you alluded to that the quarterbacks, here's the way that I look at it. The difference between the points in quarterbacks at the end of the year is far less than the difference than those running backs or wide receivers when they are tiered. The difference between the fifth quarterback and the, you know, fifth running back is going to be enormous. So I want it, when I'm drafting, I want to get as many points as possible. Who do I like for next year? Gosh, I haven't really looked that much. You said Aaron Rodgers. You got to give Drew Brees a benefit of the doubt. I haven't looked at anything in a real long time.
Do you see like a Mariota or a Jameis Winston? This is the year where they become a top 10 quarterback. Do you see like Mariota having, obviously he may not have the statistics at the same level of Cam Newton, but being that dual threat quarterback, do you think if you had to pick between like some of these young guys coming out, even the new draft picks that we're hoping to see in a couple months, do you see Mariota having more upside than Jameis Winston, or do you think it's better to go with a pro style offense, the slightly better team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Jameis Winston?
I really like the two young guys, Winston and Mariota. I didn't own either one of them in any of my leagues, but, it, you know, it was hard to not see. Obviously, Mariota missed some time. But Mariota's legs surprised me a little bit, but we all know how tricky that is if you run too much and you put yourself out there to get hurt. And,
very true.
The defenses make a difference because, obviously, the worse their defense is, the more their offense is going to have to throw to keep up. So, you know, they got good weapons in Tampa Bay, and you know that tight end came on a little bit as well. So I like the Baltimore. Derek Carr is somebody who comes to mind. I mean, gosh, Amari Cooper is one of the most exciting guys for next year. Crabtree, who I'm not particularly a fan of Crabtree, but he played really well last year. There was another guy in that draft class. Obviously Bortles, who Allen Robinson is. Oh my gosh. He'll be probably my number two receiver next year. I mean, I'm so excited about Allen Robinson for next year. He's 22 years old, and you know he makes Bortles. If that defense gets a little bit better, maybe they're in some games. Bortles and Carr are two guys in addition to Mariota and Winston that I like going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Michael and Osh, you know, I'm not really a fantasy expert by any means. I'm just a former fantasy champion, but. You know, who's really counting the rings that I have? I think we're forgetting about a quarterback by the name of Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, mm-hmm. this is his only down year in it. This was only his down year because he didn't play.
Great
really.
Time to buy Andrew Luck stock.
I think Andrew Luck is going to have a breakout return season. I'm not saying his team is going to make it far in the playoffs or anything like that, but I think we're just forgetting about Andrew Luck. He is still an awesome player. This guy was deemed the next great quarterback. So, I mean,
you're right.
It remains to be seen, but for all you people out there who do play fantasy football, as Mike said, start to buy into the Andrew Luck. Start to buy into Andrew Luck. I think he's going to come back, and I think he's going to shock a lot of people. Him and T.Y. Hilton and, you know, the rest of those receivers over there, I think it's going to be something special.
Yeah, that's a good call, Austin. A lot of people are forgetting about Andrew Luck. I mean, like I said, it's a good time to buy stock in him. Austin, who do you follow? Who's your team?
Well, so I'm a New York Jets fan, but ironically, ooh. I have actually, like you, I have had Gronkowski on my team in the last three seasons, and I've been doing a league for the past 7 years, and I'm a three-time champ and two-time runner-up right. in that league. So, and I'll tell you, for me, I agree with you. I don't take quarterbacks in the first four or five rounds. It's me. I always look at a running back usually in the first round, and then I usually am taking the first tight end off the board in the second round if I could get it. But I think I agree with you a lot. I think this year I'm going to definitely have to maybe look away from a running back, and it's going to pain me to say this as a Jets fan, but if Odell is on the board in the first round and no wide receivers have gone off yet besides Antonio Brown, I would consider taking Odell as the second wide receiver off the board. It's tough to make a call right now. And again, I had Amari Cooper last year as well. I definitely see right. a lot of potential in him. And I would not be that disappointed myself if I had Derek Carr as my starting quarterback. I honestly believe that he has a really good reputation up there. And also the competition, not really too strong. He's going against, of course the Broncos, but he's also going into the division, going against the Chargers and the Chiefs. So not a terribly difficult, a division schedule. So, couple easy games. He also has a great defense and Khalil Mack behind him. So that's another thing. I think the Raiders' defense may be a surprise pick this year. If they could keep it up, they'd be a nice sleeper pick, especially with having the all-pro Khalil Mack.
Yeah, we just rattled off about six or seven quarterbacks between the two or three of us in a matter of a few minutes, and those are all rounds that other guys are picking quarterbacks. When I can pick up, you know, Gio Bernard that are a little later on that have, you know, high upside and other position players.
Absolutely. I mean, was that a question just now or no?
Oh, no. I was just throwing it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely, you know, this upcoming football season should be very, very interesting, and this upcoming fantasy football season should be very, very interesting. For you guys looking out there for a quarterback, you're looking at Tom Brady, the Andrew Luck, the Russell Wilson, the blah, blah, blah. Look at my man over there in Cincinnati, Andy Dalton. Always puts up great stats fantasy-wise. Just putting that out there. But, Mike, I want to thank you for calling into the right way. You know, we look forward to having you on the show, man. You know, come this summer, and we look forward to talking football with you, and, you know, it should be an epic time.
Yeah, Malik, thank you very much again. Thanks for the opportunity. We had to come over a hurdle or two, but we did it, and it all worked out. It was excellent. Austin, it was nice to meet you. I look forward to discussing with you guys and, you know, having our predictions. And I don't know, Austin, do you guys do any kind of league within yourself or within the guys?
We're talking about doing that this season. Me and Malik are going to do a fantasy football league. We're going to get a couple guys, new back sports
guys, obviously
guys
count
and
me
stuff
in.
Like that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, obviously count me in. That's awesome. I'm happy to help. I'm happy to be around. And, again, I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Have a great night.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, fellas. Take it easy. Thank you.
So, Austin, you know, I got to pick at you a little bit really, really quickly. You know, it's always great having Mike on, but I got to pick at you really, really quickly. The Jets released your man, Antonio Cromartie, right? Jets released your man,
mm-hmm.
Antonio Cromartie, and now he's going to visit his former coach, division rival, Buffalo Bills. What are your thoughts on that? Does this guy still have a lot left in the tank, or do you think it's pretty much it's a career for Antonio Cromartie?
Honestly, I don't see the potential in Antonio Cromartie. I think I wish him the best, even though he may be signing with ex-New York Jets coach Rex Ryan, and furthermore an interdivision rival in the Buffalo Bills organization. But I do wish him the best. He brought a lot of great appeal to the New York Jets. I loved him side by side with Darrell Revis. I liked him with the Jets and stuff like that. I liked working them in the secondary together. So I'm proud of them. I liked him even when he was on the San Diego Chargers. Unfortunately, I don't think he has the speed anymore. He's a tall guy, which I think is very important in the secondary, which you don't see every day. You don't see you don't see these tall cornerbacks anymore. You see a lot more 5'10", 5'11 guys. So I still think he may have some value, but I think the speed and the injuries may have caught up to him. And at age 31, I just don't think he has the same appeal. I think at best he could be a number two, maybe a number three cornerback.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, let me just take this little break to say, if you guys have any questions or comments, you can always reach me at TheRealMalikWright, at gmail.com. And also, you can say your information.
It's austin.mayo@gmail.com. I didn't come up with a joke this week for the real Malik Wright, but I'll work on that material. Next week, I'll have a great email joke for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you guys ever have any questions or comments, you want to, you know, shoot any questions over to us, shoot us through Facebook. You know, our names, Malik Wright, Austin Mayo.
All right, and now
Malik. Take it from here.
Okay, so now Malik, we're really happy to have on the show now Mr. Bill Ingram. He is a senior MBA analyst, did work for USA Today, and we're really excited to have him on the show because this is going to be one of our first true segments for MBA and moving our show not only from the National Football League but now to the NBA and the other sports. So we're happy to have Bill Ingram on the show.
What's up, guys?
Hey,
how's it going, Bill?
I'm doing well. How are you? We're certainly in the stretch run where the NBA starts to matter to the extent that anything matters outside of three NBA cities being, of course, Oakland/San Francisco, San Antonio, and Cleveland.
Absolutely.
So Bill, I got to ask you our first question. You know, looking at the Western Conference, besides Golden State and San Antonio and Oklahoma City at the top, there's a team at the 5 seed, which is the Memphis Grizzlies, and they just lost Marc Gasol, presumably for the year. They only have a 5.5-game cushion in the Western Conference going into today. With other teams like the Jazz and Sacramento Kings trying to get in and the Rockets struggling recently, do you think that the Memphis Grizzlies will be able to hang on in the West, or do you think there's an opportunity for other teams to kind of snatch up that 5-seed spot and move their way up through the Western Conference standings?
Well, on the one hand, you think, you know, losing a player like Marc Gasol is devastating. The Memphis Grizzlies have not played very well all season. It's been one of the head-scratching teams, and you start to wonder if the fact that Randolph at his age, maybe the age factor, you know, the window starts to close after a while. They've been so good, but just there have been better teams in the West, and is that window starting to close? Now you lose Marc Gasol. But the bottom line is the Grizzlies play a style of basketball that would have been, you know, incredible in the 80s and 90s. But anymore, where the league has become more about the slashing, you know, the guards, the point guards especially, and the power, the small forwards and the guards, is this something where they may be forced to do something that they wouldn't have done otherwise, where they might be more successful? And, you know, you don't know. Again, the West is, it's going to come down to Golden State and San Antonio. But there are a lot of other teams playing for the other seeds, and there are interesting things that can happen, and you never know once the postseason starts. Memphis is going to be forced to adjust, and if they can't adjust, you know, with the personnel that they have, then certainly it does open up an opportunity for somebody else to jump in. Honestly, I don't see, like, a team like Houston, they don't even know who they are. Their identity is so lost. And they desperately needed to make a deal at the deadline, and even the one they did pull off then wound up not, you know, got rescinded, and you know, I don't know, some of that drama that goes on in the bottom half of the conference of the playoff picture is really less interesting this year than it has been in years past, because, you know, I mean, good Lord, the Golden State Warriors, I've never seen a team when they're faced with competition they actually care about, they destroy them. And you just wonder, yeah, is there anybody in either conference that can stop
them? Absolutely. But, you know, I have a different question for you, Bill. You know, Joe Johnson, he was just waived by the Brooklyn Nets, and now he's on the Miami Heat. Do you think he could be the push to compete with Toronto or Cleveland?
That's tough. I mean, Joe Johnson 3 or 4 years ago, you know, or when he signed that massive contract, which even then you thought, wow, really? You're going to pay him more than Kobe? Is he that kind of player? I never thought he was that kind of player. But now when you're talking about somebody who's just going to be sort of a boost for a team, can he be an X factor? Yes. Can he be the X factor that pushes you past Cleveland? Absolutely not. There's not a team in the East that I feel Toronto's been great. You know, we've seen good play from some teams. It's been very disappointing to watch Washington fall off.
Yeah.
Boston has played well. I love Charlotte. But that's all. When you say who's going to win the East, it's Cleveland. Then it's who's interesting
Absolutely.
In the East. There are a lot of interesting teams. But none of them with Joe Johnson or with anyone else. You know, even when Charlotte was talking about acquiring Dwight Howard, I'm like, well, that's interesting. Does it make them better than Cleveland? Absolutely not. There's just not a team that is even remotely, it's a whole separate class. It's like
Absolutely.
You've got an NBA team and then a bunch of D-League teams. It's kind of how that separation of power works. So is Joe Johnson somebody that helps a team get maybe to the Eastern Conference Finals? Perhaps. But past Cleveland, there's nobody that gets you past Cleveland.
Yeah. Like me, I was kind of...
And it's not a LeBron thing. They're healthy this year. It's a Kyrie Irving thing. It's a Kevin Love thing. They're a very deep team. I think the coach firing was absolutely ridiculous. You fire a coach who his team has the best record in their conference, and they just got blown out by a team that's blowing out absolutely everybody. And then a couple of nights later, they blew out the Spurs. And, you know, I was joking on Twitter with some people. It's not like Greg Popovich's job is in jeopardy. what, do you start firing everybody that the Warriors blow out? There's a bunch of coaches that are out of work. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's unfair to even compare the rest of the East to the Cavaliers because, hey, LeBron knew where he was going. He knew he needed a guy that gets it done in crunch time. He had that in Dwayne Wade. Now he has that in Kyrie Irving. If the Cavaliers are healthy, there's nobody in the East that can even get a game from them.
Absolutely. Like for me, for instance, I'm a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, and I was quite honestly shocked that Joe Johnson, signed with the Miami Heat over the Cleveland Cavaliers because the Cleveland Cavaliers were in play for him. So, like, my question to you is, do you think it was a right decision for him to go to the Miami Heat over the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, if I'm Joe Johnson and I'm at this, he's at that stage of his career where he has done everything he's going to do as a player in his own right. And now it's where can you get a championship run? I didn't understand that. I just assumed he would land in Miami because, hey, you don't have to do a whole lot. And will Joe Johnson still give you 20 now and then? Yes. And in the playoffs, is that critically important? Absolutely. I mean, hey, look at, historically, guys, look, when Dallas won the championship, they don't win that championship without Peja Stojakovic going off on the Lakers. But Peja was a non-factor the rest of the playoffs. You need to have a lot of different guys on your team who can step up. Dellavedova last year in the playoffs was phenomenal for Cleveland at a time when they needed somebody to step up. But for him to go to Miami, like, really, Miami without him is a first-round exit, and with him, they're, a first-round exit, depending on the matchup. I didn't. If I'm Joe Johnson, I go carry LeBron's baggage or carry Kyrie's baggage, whatever you have to do there.
Yeah.
Because that's a chance to contribute to a champion. Or at least, I don't believe Cleveland can get past Golden State, even with Joe Johnson. But, hey, at least you're in the finals.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. Now, Bill, I'm on the other hand. I'm a New York Knicks fan. So for me, and my question is going to be something where there's probably the right answer, and there's the answer that Knicks fans want to hear. So I'm going to ask you: do you see them at all having a chance at making a run at the playoffs? Which for them, even though they're six games out of eighth place, they would have to go over Chicago, Detroit, Washington, and Orlando. And also, adding to that question, where do you see the value of Carmelo Anthony, and do you think the Knicks would be willing to make any moves with him, either this offseason or in the future?
Well, George Karl is a very good friend of mine, and I've never seen him so happy as the day after they traded Carmelo Anthony. And he said, I will take a team any day. We will be better without Carmelo and Iverson, no matter who we get. We will be better because we'll play as a team than we were with them because everybody else had to stand around and watch them shoot. And when you watch Carmelo Anthony, I've never been a fan of Carmelo as a player because he's a high-volume shooter who doesn't play defense. And it's why, as a lifelong Rockets fan, I find it very hard to be a fan of the team built around James Harden, who is a volume shooter and refuses to play defense. Like, it's a joke. Like, whoever, Portland 2 years ago, whoever James Harden was matched up against, they just gave him the ball. And then there was, like, a YouTube video that went viral about whoever James Harden was guarding, scored every single time. The Blazers just kept going to whoever James's guy was. They scored every time. And that's Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo's going to come down. He wants to put up his offensive numbers will always be impressive because he's a great shooter. He's a great scorer. But you can't just be a scorer if you expect to win games. And at this stage of Carmelo's career, he's not going to change any more than James Harden is going to change. And so, for me, the first reality you have to face, and I thought when they added Phil Jackson to the front office crew, and it was like, yeah, we're going to play a triangle, there have only been two times in the history of the NBA when the triangle has been effective. And in both of those instances, you had the hands-down, inarguable best player in the league to bail out the triangle when it didn't work. Because when the triangle broke down, you gave it to Michael and he magicked a win. Or you gave it to Kobe and he magicked a win. You don't have that in Carmelo. Carmelo is not the high IQ player, both ends of the floor player that Michael and Kobe both were. And so the first reality that you have to face if you're the New York Knicks is Carmelo has taken you, what are they, 8 games out? That's as far as Carmelo Anthony can take as a team.
And now going off
that reality, I mean, the Knicks, that's where they're going to be. They're going to be on the outside looking in.
So let me ask you this now. With the Knicks probably not making the playoffs this year, just because the amount of volume of teams that are still ahead of them and are playing decent basketball right now, coaching for next year, do you have a particular guy in mind that you think could take over this team? Of course, the guys on the list right now that have been circulating were Luke Walton from Golden State, Tom Thibodeau, who's a former New York assistant, and Brian Shaw, who has a good relationship with Phil Jackson, and furthermore was actually considered for the job back in 2014. Do you see any of those guys on the list having a better chance than the other? And or is there anyone that you think has a better chance than those three guys?
Well, the best coach available is Tom Thibodeau. And if you can convince him to take the job, hello. The problem is Carmelo, how long before you have to trade Carmelo? Because Tom Thibodeau is not going to accept what Carmelo's giving you. He's not going to accept a player who expects to be the number one option on the offensive end but doesn't play defense. You're not going to play for Tom Thibodeau. Now, Brian Shaw, a very player-friendly type coach, is he better than Derek Fisher? I have a hard time making that argument. So I think really what you have to do is you have to hire the best front office staff you can hire first. And they didn't do that. Then you need the best coach you can get. Thibodeau is the best coach they can get. But what you have to do then is you have to mold the team to match what Tom Thibodeau wants to do as a coach. And the first thing you're going to have to do is make a tough decision about Carmelo Anthony because he doesn't fit. So on the one hand, the best coach you can get is Tom Thibodeau. If you're married and absolutely in love and cannot deal with Carmelo Anthony, which that's where the Knicks are, then I think Brian Shaw is a great choice because Brian Shaw is going to come in and he's not going to challenge Carmelo to do too much that he's not already doing. And you're going to hope that you can build it, you know, put a few more pieces in place. Hey, Porzingis has been great. If it wasn't for Carl Anthony Towns, perhaps you're talking about rookie of the year type numbers. Maybe you can add another player or two and make them interesting. But they're never going to be a championship team. When you want to be a championship team, it starts in the front office, then it's the coach, then it's the players. And you don't have the front office in place. Tom Thibodeau would be the coach. He's a championship coach. He is. With the right front office and the right pieces, he is. But that's not what the Knicks are doing. The Knicks are too busy worried about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, I've got a few more questions for you, Bill. And we definitely appreciate you coming on, you know, chatting it up with us. Next question may be a funny question. But what team in your eyes has the best chance of beating Golden State Warriors? You know, you got San Antonio, got OKC, you know, Cleveland, and I wouldn't even consider Toronto, but like in your eyes, which team do you think has the best opportunity of beating Golden State?
Well, it's a tough question because the Warriors have been in a class by themselves. The easy answer happens to be my answer, which is the San Antonio Spurs. And the reason is because they have so much postseason experience. They know how to run players. You know, if you want to stop the three-point attack, the Spurs can do that. I loved Greg Popovich's move, even though it was kind of crazy for an all-star game. But Paul George is on pace to break the all-time scoring record. So he says, hey, Kawhi, go stop Paul. And he does. Now, can Kawhi Leonard stop Steph Curry consistently? No. But in a seven-game series, can the Spurs come up with a way to slow him down 4 times? Of any team in the league, there's only one team that I think has a chance to do that, and that's San Antonio. And it's because you have an incredibly smart group of players who have played together for so long, and they have the kind of trust that you must have to be a championship-caliber team. They have a star player who is completely in step with the coach, and Greg Popovich will tell you every single time you try to talk to him about how great he's been, he points to Tim Duncan and says, it's because he allows me to coach him. Greg Popovich his expectations are sky high, and he's gotten results. And if there's a team that can challenge Golden State, a team that understands them, understands Steve Kerr, obviously, understands their stars, understands how to win in a seven-game series, how to make adjustments, it's Greg Popovich and the Spurs. I loved the offseason they had with LaMarcus Aldridge and David West. It was an incredible way for them to stay relevant. And, you know, Tim Duncan could take a game off and they miss nothing because David West is an incredible pro on both ends of the floor and in the locker room. Can they stop Golden State? Wow. As much as I'm a huge Golden State admirer, if not fan, I have seen the Warriors when they feel threatened, when they are facing an opponent that they feel is dangerous. They, and Steph Curry in particular, they go to a place that very few teams, very few players have been able to go, and they just dagger you to death. So if there's a team that can beat them, it's San Antonio. But in saying that, I don't believe the Spurs can do it.
I was hoping that you, being a Cavaliers fan, I was hoping that you would say, oh, the Cavaliers have a good shot, even with being healthy. But I didn't get the answer I was looking for, but it's all right.
Well, the Spurs, hey, I mean, the Cavaliers, give them credit. You've put together a great team. I mean, LeBron's a triple-double waiting to happen, and I absolutely – there are a few players in the league at the point guard position that I like better than Kyrie Irving on and off the court. Being in the East, I didn't get to talk to him very much, mostly at All-Star games. I would see him more than during the season. And every time I got to sit down and chat with him, I was so impressed by how grounded he is and how professional and very mature for his age. Kind of like Steph Curry early in his career, the only thing that kept holding him back was the ankle. He kept getting hurt, and Kyrie has had some untimely injuries. But Kyrie, his mentality and his game when he's healthy is incredible. And, you know, hey, I think they're going to have a great postseason run. Can they stop? I just think, you know, there's always a very, like, an incredibly good team that doesn't get a championship because there's just one team that's just better. And I look at, you know, Dominique Wilkins was an incredible player for years. But the problem was he kept having to go through Michael. And Michael, as incredible as Dominique was, Michael was just that much better. And I think with Kyrie, you have the same thing. Steph Curry is just, I mean, Kyrie's amazing. But Steph Curry is just that much better. And I think that's what Cleveland runs into. It comes down to Kyrie versus, as much as, you know, LeBron gets all the press because ever since he was in high school, they called him the king and all that stuff. But LeBron's only been as good as the player who's better than him. In Miami, it was Dwayne Wade. Now it's Kyrie. The thing is, Steph Curry is just a little bit better than Kyrie, and that's what it's going to come down to.
Now Bill, want to bring it back to a team you're more familiar with, and that's the Houston Rockets. At the beginning of the season, they were thought to be a guaranteed playoff. They were thought to be a guaranteed playoff team, maybe even a shot at the championship. Now, no one saw Golden State and San Antonio running away with the West. Of course, some people saw, of course, Cleveland, and then even Toronto was a bit of a surprise. But no one thought the Rockets would be almost out of the playoffs as they are right now. You mentioned it, you alluded to it earlier when you said that James Harden is becoming one of these high-volume shot guys that doesn't really benefit the team. And, of course, every meme on the Internet has talked about his defense, at least to some degree. But do you see the future of the Rockets and going up from here, or do you see them having to perhaps even rebuild, maybe even getting rid of Dwight Howard? There were rumors, of course, just several weeks ago that Dwight Howard was on the trade block and, you know, teams were requesting a first-round pick and stuff for him. Do you think that the Rockets will try to make a move in this offseason with him? And do you think the Rockets overall have a shot at getting back to that high playoff contention rate and try to keep up with teams, not just like Golden State, but with San Antonio and Oklahoma City and even the Clippers to a degree?
The problem with the Rockets is in the front office. And, yes, I know that team better than a lot of people know that team. Sam Hinkie is a very good friend of mine, and when he was there, we had long, very frank conversations about the moves that they were making, and I kept saying, Sam, really? And, of course, he's kind of doing the same thing in Philly. Everybody's looking at him going, what? And now he's effectively all but been replaced. Colangelo is really the new GM there. And it's because you have this idea that players are commodities. You know, the movie came out in the book, and it's great, but the A's aren't champions. The Rockets aren't champions. Daryl Morey will never be the GM of a championship team. You can write that down. I've been saying it for years. And the reason is because to Daryl Morey, every player is a commodity only. The Rockets are not a family. They are a commodity. And every player that comes to Houston is treated that way. And Dwight Howard came to Houston, and they were talking about it like it was a king. Now, I one of the greatest days of my life as someone covering the NBA was the day Akeem invited me to his house, and we spent several hours just shooting the crap about the NBA. And he actually, when we were leaving, was like, "Hey, you know the team better than me. I play for the team." I bled Rockets red for years. Daryl Morey has cured me of that. I'm at a point where it's hard to even watch the team because I already know where their weaknesses are and how they're going to implode. Number one, when you start talking about Dwight Howard like he's Hakeem Olajuwon, you don't understand who Hakeem Olajuwon was. Hakeem Olajuwon was an assassin who took out anyone who was standing between him and a win, and he would do it with his passing. He would do it by reinventing his offense every night. He would do it however it had to be done. He was blocking every shot that came anywhere near the basket. He was dominant. Dwight Howard is more in love with himself in the locker room than he is with winning. And, Dwight's a great guy. I've always loved Dwight. Who doesn't love the dunk contest with Superman and the home movement? That's all great. But he doesn't understand that when the game is on the line, it's time to get serious and play basketball and be an assassin. If he understood that, he would have developed a low post move. Hakeem Olajuwon at age 50 was schooling him on the court the summer that Dwight went to work with Hakeem. Hakeem is 50, about to turn 51, and destroying Dwight in his prime on the court because Dwight doesn't develop his game. Dwight thinks it's enough to go out and do some flashy dunks, and he thinks that's great, and that's what the Rockets bought into when they gave up the farm to sign him and then let the guy who recruited him to town go away in Chandler Parsons. Of course, injuries have derailed his career as well. But when you have a team that doesn't understand the importance of consistency, of coherency, of having a team identity, and then finding players that fit that identity the way the San Antonio Spurs do, then you have a team that's always going to be rebuilding. And when I heard the Rockets talking about trading Dwight and they needed a first-round pick in the deal, I thought James Harden is about to ask for a trade because you've got another guy in his prime who wants to win, and you're telling him, hey, we're rebuilding for the third time since you've been here, and you haven't been here that long? I just find that I don't believe the Houston Rockets will be in contention. Last year it took some, you know, Chris Paul had to get hurt. It took some scenarios to help them to the Western Conference Finals. But I don't believe the Houston Rockets, in fact, I will say the Houston Rockets will not be ever a championship team with Daryl Morey in the front office because, like I said with the Knicks, winning a championship starts in the front office. And when the front office doesn't get it, the team will never be successful.
Absolutely. Now, I got to ask you this question. This is the final question. Once again, we appreciate you coming on today. You know, with Kobe Bryant retiring, you know, you interviewed Kobe Bryant right before the 2008 playoffs. And from there, he went on to win the 2008 and 2010 NBA championships. Overall, what do you think his legacy is in the NBA? And where does he rank in your eyes among the all-time greats?
I have never been a late. I have to preface anytime I get to ask this a lot about Kobe. Of course, you know, expected because of who he is and what he's been. One of the great privileges of my career was getting to know him in a way that I got interviews with him regularly one-on-one that was kind of hard to do. I was never a Lakers fan. I have never been a Lakers fan. I grew up in Houston. If I'm a fan of the team, it was Houston for years now, kind of San Antonio. Because of Greg Popovich, just the way they do their business. But so what I'm about to say, it comes from a standpoint of I have never been a Lakers fan. I will never be a Lakers fan. But Kobe Bryant is one of the great players of all time. And it's because he has a way of carrying himself, a way of being serious about the game that is missing largely. Steph Curry has this. Derrick Rose has this. Unfortunately, his body doesn't have it. There are very few players, and certainly LeBron doesn't have this. Kobe, when the game begins, he goes to a place mentally where he is an assassin. He's Larry Bird. He's Magic Johnson. He's Hakeem Olajuwon. He's the great players of all time. Michael Jordan had a place that they went when the game started. Whoever was on the other team was standing between them and their goal, and they were going to kill them if necessary. You know, take the ball and go through them, and if you're between me and the basket, you're between me and my goal, and I'm going to destroy you on the court. That's what you have to have to be an NBA champion. And Kobe Bryant, when you look at a guy who is 6, they list him, I think it's 6'6", he's 6'4", 6'5", he's not, you know, Michael had this incredible jumping ability, incredible gift physically. LeBron is just an unimaginable, maybe the best athlete to ever play in the NBA. You know, Wilt Chamberlain, Akeem reinvented the center position, all these guys. But Kobe didn't have any special gift. Kobe has a killer instinct and a heart and a desire that overwhelmed anyone he was playing against, night after night. And it was nothing special. He had to work for it every night, and he did. I love the night in Miami where they lost, and he had a pretty good game, 24, 26 points, but he shot 30-something percent from the field, and he spent 2 hours after the game shooting around. The fans were all heckling, and finally somebody asked him, why are you doing this? He said, well, did you see I shot 6 for 24 from the field tonight. I got to fix that. It's got to be tonight because we have another game. I got to fix it now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I had a bad night. Let me go back to the hotel. Kobe Bryant is one of the all-time great players because of that heart. He had to work for everything he got. There was nothing about him physically. Like LeBron was gifted. He can walk out on the court. He can overwhelm most players every night without having to work too hard. Kobe had to work at it, and he worked at it every night. And that, though I will never be a Lakers fan, blah, 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 Lakers, you know, world's favorite, best, whatever. But that is what made me respect Kobe Bryant, and that was what made me take an interest in him and get to know him in a way that I could get the interviews I got, because I thought anybody that's willing to work that hard every night to be a champion gets it. And we have an NBA today that is full of players that don't get that. And it's why the NBA is a watered-down product compared to what we saw in the 80s and the 90s. The NBA today, every night you can look at the schedule, most games are a foregone conclusion. Because
absolutely,
we don't have Kobe Bryant anymore.
Great point. You know, it all comes down to having that killer instinct. And without a shadow of a doubt, Kobe Bryant definitely had that. Bill Ingram, we definitely want to thank you again for joining us here on The Right Way. And taking all of our questions, you know, as we transition into the NBA portion of The Right Way, you know, we greatly appreciate you being a part of that transition and helping us out and answering all the questions that our viewers wanted to hear. So we thank you for that.
Anytime. You know where to find me. I'm happy to chat.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Have a great night. Have a great night, man.
You bet. You too.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Bill Ingram, NBA analyst, writer for USA Today. We want to thank him again for coming on to The Right Way and being a supporter. We want to thank you guys for being a supporter. Once again, if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook at Malik Wright and at my Gmail, The Real Malik Wright at gmail.com.
The Real. Malik has left the building. And you can reach me on Facebook, Austin Mayo, and email austin.mayo@gmail.com. Also, just to give a quick shout-out to Bill, thanks again for having him on the show. You guys could follow him on Twitter. We actually tweet at him yesterday, so you could just go to The Right Way BSP on Twitter and find out. Bill Ingram's Twitter is at The Rocket Guy, of course, because, you know, he did know quite a bit about the Rockets and very good insight, too, about that front office thing, something we don't really consider, Malik, is the importance of the front office and how they play a role, not only in the roster moves, but just how the organization treats its players. And, you know, you see
absolutely
Dwight Howard on the surface, but to the average fan, we don't know what's going on inside. We don't know what's going on in that locker room. And I think he echoed those sentiments again with contrasting Howard and Harden with Kobe, and how Kobe had that intuition and that instinct that
to always work harder and to always, you know, hit that special spot that he said, that he mentioned, that very few players could hit. So a lot of great insight from Bill. And once again, we want to thank him for being on the show and helping us transition from strictly an NFL podcast, and now we're expanding into NBA and much more sports for weeks to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. You couldn't have said it better, my friend. Now, with that being said, we're transitioning to all different sports. This next segment is for all of our, you know, combat sport fans. So, you know, we got a big fight coming up in the UFC, Austin. We got Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor, and you know, I'm personally excited for the fight. I don't know about you, but I'm excited for the fight. And I'm excited for the fight because I want to know what these two men are going to do to each other, because Nate Diaz just made a comment saying that, basically accusing Conor McGregor and a lot of UFC fighters of using steroids, which, as you can probably assume, that it didn't, you know, go too well with Conor McGregor. He was kind of pissed off. So what's your insight on that?
Well, listen, and Malika, we were talking about this before the show, and we want to bring up this debate again. One thing that I don't like about these sports, specifically these combat sports, and you see it not just with UFC with the guys, but you see it with the girls as well, with Ronda Rousey and you know, her recent defeat, and even in boxing to a degree with Mayweather Pacquiao, it seems that, like, these programs need to emphasize the press conference as almost bigger than the actual show, because the press conference is free and all these shows are pay-per-view and no one actually gets to see them. I've never gotten to see any of these fights. I always watch the highlights on ESPN, and the fights are so short you could probably get the entire thing on the internet. And one of the things that I've been really annoyed with this entire week is that the press conference and everything, it's been focused on one guy's dumb comment that in a way even makes fun of himself because he gets drug tested. And yet at the same time, we're not paying attention to the actual fight, which, if you look at the tail of the tape, is an incredible fight. You have two guys that combined have almost 40 wins in UFC. Conor McGregor, who is arguably the best fighter in UFC currently. And by the way, he'll let you know about it too. He will talk the talk. And my point is, Malik, and feel free to disagree with me, because I know you do have different opinions on this, but in your eyes, do you see the press conference as taking away from the fight to a degree, and all this hype actually diminishing the value of what, in my opinion, is actually a very smart, a very intelligent, but also an extremely difficult sport to not only learn, but to compete at the highest level in?
I mean, no, I don't see it as taking away from the fight at all. I mean, I think it adds a better element to the game, to the fight. I mean, you go back to Muhammad Ali's comments. People want to be excited before a fight. People want to get hyped before the fight, you know, almost to say, you know, Muhammad Ali back in the day, you know, he used to be famous for, you know, during his press conference, he used to talk trash to his opponent, tell his opponent when he's going to knock him out, and go out and do it. So I think, you know, from a press conference standpoint, and, you know, signings and on weigh-ins and all that stuff like that, it's great for the sport, especially with UFC and boxing. You know, you may not really know these guys, the two fighters that are about to fight. You may know one of them, but you may not know the other. But, you know, that's what the press conference essentially gets you to, you know, get you ready for. You get to know the other fighter. You know, you go back to Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey. You know, they're weighing. Nobody really knew who Holly Holm was. I knew who she was. Did anybody know Holly Holm was undefeated? No. Everybody thought Ronda Rousey was the biggest, baddest woman on the planet, and she was going to knock her out. And I beg to differ. You know, I thought that Holly Holm was going to be an extreme test to her. But, you know, a lot of people didn't think so. But, you know, what the press conference showed, a lot of people thought that the press conference was going to just be like any other press conference. Ronda Rousey getting in your face, you know, making you scared. But what happened this time around, you know, Ronda Rousey got in Holly Holm's face, and she tried to bully her in a sense, and she was the one that, you know, got bullied. You know, she put her fist in her face, and Holly Holm responded by putting her fist in her face and, you know, pushing her jaw down. And, you know, Ronda Rousey didn't even expect that. So I think that press conferences, weigh-ins, they have a certain element that they add to the fight. And I think, you know, us as fans, you know, we sit back and watch this, you know, you're not going to always get your Muhammad Ali's, your Conor McGregor's, your Floyd Mayweather's, all the, you know, all these fighters who advocate for themselves, who say things before the fight that gets you hyped. Sometimes you need the press conference to build, you know, to build the fight up in a sense. You know what I mean? Floyd Mayweather's fight can sell itself. Muhammad Ali's fight could sell itself. Mike Tyson's fight could sell itself. Ronda Rousey, you know, it's like give or take kind of sell itself. I mean, before her being knocked out, everybody just assumed she was going to run through everybody, which we sooner or later found out to not be the case. I mean, I think press conferences are great for the sport. You know, sometimes you get to crazy press conferences like Mike Tyson, where Mike Tyson will say crazy things like you know, I think he said at one press conference, I'm going to eat you or something like that. I'm going to eat you alive or something like that. You know, you get your crazy fighters who don't know how to control themselves. But, you know, people, once again, we are in a day, a time where people like to be entertained. And I think that's what the press conference does for you. I think that's what it does for you. And I think that it doesn't hurt the fight. I think it helps the fight in many, many, many different ways.
And don't get me wrong. I think to a degree, the press conference does have a certain quality that you know, makes it's not just the physical aspect of the fight. It brings in the mental aspect. And I think that's why people on television not only witnessed a Muhammad Ali fight, but also appreciated and just tried to comprehend, like, the mental side of boxing. And it's a very unique sport. It's a sport where you're going out of your way to damage someone so badly that they fall to the ground. But at the end of the day, you don't see this in other sports. In baseball, the two managers are not having a weigh-in before and saying how each team is going to destroy each other. You don't see this in football, basketball. And these sports are more popular than them. And if you're saying, well, maybe those are team sports. You don't see this in tennis. Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova are not going face-to-face before, you know, a Grand Slam. And those are getting just as much media attention and stuff like that. You don't see it in other sports. You don't see it in golf and stuff like that. So why do they need for this?
A combat sport. It's a combat physical sport. I mean, you want to see the two competitors face-to-face, you know, who are going at it before a fight. Now, you say that, you know, we don't see that in football. We don't see this. Okay, so let me ask you this. For boxing, this may sound crazy, but for boxing, every event to them is big. Every event is big because they wouldn't advertise it. And I mean,
They're only facing like two or three times. Like most of these boxers and stuff in the UFC fights, they're only competing in maybe two matches a year versus football players play 16, 20 games.
So what I'm saying is, like, the Super Bowl, for instance. Once you make the argument that the Super Bowl week where they interview all the NFL players and, you know, that's not needed. One can make that argument. People can say, what's the need for us to interview Peyton Manning or this player or that player before the game to see what their thoughts are? They should just go out there and do it. But no, people want to this is what they're doing. Again, when they do press conferences, they want to dive into the athlete's mind. They want to know what their thoughts are before this battle. And, you know, it's the same thing with MMA. It's the same thing with boxing. They want to dive into the athlete's mind to see what he's thinking, to see what he or she is, you know, if they're mentally prepared for the fight. I think that's what it comes down to. And it just so happens when it comes to boxing, you know, when it comes to boxing, it just happens to be another way of promotion. But the Super Bowl was a way of promotion as well because, you know, I mean, it's going to promote itself in a sense, but, no, it is going to promote itself, not even in a sense, it's going to promote itself. But, you know, hearing people's comments, you know, it's going to make you want to watch, it's going to make you want to watch, you know, watch the Super Bowl. Or even, you know, take the Super Bowl out for a minute. Games throughout the NFL season, you know, players get interviewed, you know, three times a week, you know, get their thoughts on the upcoming game. It could be a regular season game. And that's where you may hear a player make a controversial comment. It's like, what is the need for asking the players, you know, what they think about this team or that team or for the game? They should just go out and play. But, no, they want to know what the player's thinking. If Tom Brady is going against Peyton Manning, you know, they're going to ask Tom Brady, what do you think about Peyton Manning? Even though they've asked him that question a million times, it's a question that needs to be asked because they want to know, like, it's the media. It's a question that they got to ask. And it's the same thing with, same thing with boxing, same thing with MMA. They just want to build more hype for the fight. It once started as just a way to, you know, just see what they were thinking in their minds. But now it's, you know, it's it's taking a turn to this. But I think it actually helps Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I'm saying, like, I understand the need for the press conference, but the severity in which these two individuals, whether they're men or women, the way in which they talk about their opponents and not having any respect for their opponents, if Steph Curry, before a game against LeBron James, said, "I'm going to eat LeBron alive," or "LeBron ain't anything, and I don't care about LeBron at all, and his team is trash, and he doesn't deserve to be in the NBA or anything like that, and my record proves it," or whatever, no one would be saying, "Wow, Steph Curry really is going in there with a great attitude. You could tell he's mentally prepared." No, the media would be saying, "What the heck is wrong with this guy? Something is very wrong with him. What is he talking like that for? You got to respect your opponents and stuff like that."
And that's
so
what
why
makes,
is it in?
And that's what makes it different. It's combat. You said it yourself. Before a MMA fight or a boxing fight, they're going into this fight with the mentality to destroy their opponent. That's the mentality they're going with. Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors, before facing the Cleveland Cavaliers, aren't going into that game like we're going to physically dominate them, we're going to pummel them to the ground, because it's not a physical sport. You know, football. I can understand if somebody made a comment like that, but even still, it's not like you're going in to kill your opponent. In these combat sports, in MMA, in boxing, you're physically trying to do harm to your opponent. You're not trying to win by a decision, although sometimes it happens that way. You're trying to knock your opponent out. You're trying to do physical damage to your opponent. So I think I think that's where it's different. We're literally about to go face to face and pummel each other. So, you know, I think that's what it comes down to.
So let me ask you, to summarize this and to bring this, you know, full circle to a degree, let me ask you this. Then why are sports like UFC, sports like boxing, male and female, why are they not as popular? Because football has the element of that physical contact. Guys sometimes do say things about their opponents that probably shouldn't really be said. There is a level that they lack respect. You see fights and skirmishes break out all the time. Heck, in hockey, you are legally allowed to have a fight, and you go into a penalty box for 5 minutes, and everything's A-okay. Meanwhile, those sports take off. They have more viewership. They have the fan base. UFC and boxing doesn't. I'm asking whether or not you agree with this, which obviously, you know, I'm more against the whole concept of the press conference in terms of how they act. But at the end of the day, these people that are boxing in UFC don't have the attraction to the fans. So maybe if they change the face of the sport, if they change the way that they interact in press conferences, maybe that could boost the sport a little bit more and connect with a larger audience. Because at the end of the day, if I'm a parent, I don't want my 10-year-old kid watching UFC and boxing and seeing the opponent say all these terrible things about each other. Whereas in baseball and football and these other sports, even football, you could still have somewhat of respect for the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think, once again, I can't control the way the players act. I mean, we can sit up here, we can say, why do they do this? Why do they do that? But when it comes down to it, I think it's just the sport. It's what it's come down to. I mean, I think boxing is going to, or UFC is going to struggle regardless of if they have a press conference or not have a press conference. The press conference is just keeping them relevant. The press conference is just, you know, adding hype before a fight. It's their last minute resort to, you know, getting some type of fanfare for the fight. It's, you know, trying to draw viewers in. And, you know, I think they would hurt themselves if they just did away with the press conference personally. I mean, nobody would have been really interested in Floyd Mayweather versus Oscar De La Hoya, you know, the first time they fought, if Mayweather didn't go into the fight. And if Mayweather didn't go into the fight, you know, into the press conference with the sombrero on his head and dancing and stuff like that, and you know that this is what this sport does. If you want to blame someone, you can blame Mayweather. Mayweather brought this element back to boxing, back to combat sports. He started, trolling his opponent and getting his opponent so mad and getting in his head. This is where it started. I mean, well, no, it started with Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson, but, you know, it kind of got brought back with Mayweather. So, you know, and he saw it as a way to make money. You saw how big the sport of boxing was back when Muhammad Ali would threaten his opponent and tell him what round he was going to knock him out, and he would go out there and do it. And Mayweather was just, he saw that as, because, you know, we all know he's a businessman, he saw that as a way to make money and a way to, you know, bring more viewers in, because obviously the more viewers he brings in, the more money he makes. That's why they call him Money Mayweather. He saw that as, haha, a ticket. So he started doing the same exact thing. And other fighters like Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, whether they're going to admit it or not, they copied him. And you know, it seems for their fights, it works out. Now, for the quiet fighters, not so much. Not so much. But with that being said, in talking about Mayweather, the last topic of the day, Austin, I got to ask you this. Do you think Floyd Money Mayweather, we all know he's 49-0, he's undefeated, he's the greatest boxer, whether you or anyone wants to admit, he's the greatest boxer of our generation, of our era. Do you think he should come out of retirement to fight Danny Garcia, who has a record of 32-0 with 18 knockouts? Do you think he should? And, you know, claim his 50th fight.
I think he should come out of retirement. I don't think he should come out and face that guy. I don't really care. There's no appeal to him at all. What I do see appeal in, and this has been reported in the last couple of days around several boxing networks, is that it's being reported now that Pacquiao will postpone his retirement if Mayweather accepts a rematch. And I think, from Mayweather's perspective, it's great if you fight Garcia and he's 32-0 and it's like the old guy and the new guy and stuff, like the guy in his prime, they're both undefeated, someone's got to lose and stuff like that. It's great. But Mayweather wants to go where the money is. And Pacquiao has an upcoming trilogy fight. And if he fights in that trilogy fight and then he wants to fight Mayweather one final time, the amount of money that would flood into this match would be incredible. So from my perspective, as a boxing course, you want to see the Garcia fight because you want to see guys that are in their prime. And I've said this, months ago, even years ago, when the Pacquiao fight and the Mayweather fight was first coming to light back in 2012, when they were originally to schedule, I think right around like a March 20th date several years ago, people wanted to see it when it was in their prime. So as a boxing fan, you want to see Mayweather fight the young guy, but as a fan of entertainment, and I'm sure as a fan of money, in the case of Money Mayweather, I gotta think that you would want to have your 50th and final match against Manny Pacquiao. And now Manny Pacquiao has been in the news lately with his comments and stuff like that. We don't really want to talk about that too much. That's not really our business, not really our forte, not even sports related. But my point is that I think the money is in the Pacquiao fight, and I think it makes more sense for Mayweather to fight him. But Malik, what's your take on the whole situation?
I mean, why? Why would he go out there and fight Manny Pacquiao, a guy who taunted him for years, you know, asking for a fight, making commercials, disrespecting him? He goes in, I mean, look at it from this perspective. You taunt the guy for several years, begging him to fight you. He wants to fight me, making commercials, saying this, saying that, after every single one of your fights. You know, you're saying you want to fight him, you want to fight him, you want to fight him. And then he finally gives you the fight. And everybody wants to say, well, Manny Pacquiao, if he was younger, he would beat Floyd Mayweather. Manny Pacquiao is younger than Floyd Mayweather, might I add. Okay? Manny Pacquiao is younger than Floyd Mayweather, as far as you critics out there who always say Manny Pacquiao was younger. Floyd Mayweather is about to be 40 years old. But anyway, man, you know, why would he go come back out and fight Manny Pacquiao? I mean, Manny Pacquiao, you talked to this guy for several years. You finally got this fight on the biggest stage, the MGM Grand Arena, sold out by celebrities. It was a sold-out event. You guys brought in the biggest box office when it comes to boxing, and you lost. It wasn't even close. You lost the fight. Your best round was the fourth round. Why would you want to fight? Why are you even worthy of fighting Floyd Mayweather again? Why? You're not worthy. That's my whole thing. Floyd Mayweather beat Manny Pacquiao and beat him decisively. Floyd Mayweather is the greatest defensive boxer ever, but in our era, he's the greatest boxer ever in our era. He has nothing to prove to Manny Pacquiao. He has nothing to prove to Bob Arum. He has nothing to prove to Freddie Roach, to his camp. He has nothing to prove to anyone. If I was Mayweather, I mean, I don't agree with him fighting Andre Berto, but if Mayweather is actually seriously pondering another fight, I would fight Amir Khan personally. That's I mean, this guy's been calling me out, begging to fight me. I'd fight Amir Khan. But you, I mean, you got people like Triple G and all these guys begging to fight Floyd Mayweather. No, no. But like, I mean, that's my answer to the Pacquiao question. I think Mayweather and Pacquiao have no reason to step foot in a boxing ring with each other again. I think it's not healthy for the sport.
Listen, at the end of the day, I agree that Mayweather has nothing to prove. The only reasons that I could say there may be some doubt in that is, one, you know, the Las Vegas is always going to say this didn't happen. The media is kind of slanted on this, and there's many different perspectives. But a lot of conspiracy theorists, or maybe just people that enjoy Pacquiao's fighting ability, question he had an injury and stuff like that, and he couldn't get a certain drug because it wasn't approved and everything. And whether that had an actual impact on the fight, we don't know. We will probably never know to a degree. Of course, different perspectives will give you different things depending on who they're trying to side with or what their intentions are. But my idea for Mayweather, and the only reason I could see Mayweather doing this, is one, because he wants to make more money off of it, and two, it would be another shot to beat Pacquiao, which I honestly think he would be able to beat again, as much as I like Pacquiao, not so much after his comments recently, but just in general, I liked his style of fighting. Unfortunately, I don't think it would be done, and I agree with you, Malik. I don't think there's much of an incentive, but again, money may come into play here, and if Mayweather wants it, he'll get it, and a nice 50-0 record wouldn't be anything to shake your head at. So definitely a lot of perspectives there, but it's definitely a great debate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, these next few months should be very, very interesting. But unfortunately, we've run out of time here on The Right Way. I want to thank you for joining me and my co-host Austin for this episode. We want to thank Bill Ingram again for joining in and answering all our questions. And, you know, we're just very, very, very excited for everything that's, you know, that's going on with the show. We want to thank you guys for being supportive, and, you know, we're looking forward to it. We also want to thank Michael Piccarelli, our fantasy expert, who's going to be joining us next football season, talk football with us, for coming on, talking some football with us, getting you guys psyched up. You know, I think overall today was a great show, bringing an NBA segment to it, and, you know, just attacking all sports that you guys want to hear about. Any last comments, Austin?
Well, guys, next week we're really excited because we're working on our Bet Sports page, The Right Way, with Austin and Malik Wright draft board. And we're really excited. We're going to be looking at the first round. So if you're interested in all 32 teams, even New England Patriots, who don't have a pick just yet, but maybe we'll see from Roger Goodell, you can call in and ask us questions, and we'll tell you not only who we think they're going to go with, but who we think the consensus pick is. And we're going to be comparing those things as well. And we may agree, we may disagree, but it'll be a lot of fun. Also, we got March Madness around the corner, so we're definitely going to be doing our research and telling you who we think should be in your bracket. So two really important sports, you know, with both the draft and March Madness to look forward to in the upcoming weeks. And we're excited, The Right Way, moving along, doing a lot of different sports. Make sure you check out our Facebook page. We just redid some of the pictures and stuff like that, so it's looking really good. And, of course, Twitter, we're more active on Twitter now. We're tweeting out the Rocket Guy and all these different guys, and we'll be posing questions throughout the week for our fans to respond to. So we're really excited from a social media perspective, and be on the lookout. We're Malik, you told me I'm going to do it, and I think I'm going to work on it soon, an Instagram project. So we may be making an Instagram account. So
we're gonna be Insta famous.
So the right, yeah. So we'll be Insta famous. Make sure you tag us and stuff like that. So that will come up next week. But we're definitely looking forward to great shows and great different sports ahead.
Absolutely. Once again, guys, you can reach me if you have any questions. Or like, you can reach me at my email, therealmalikwright@gmail.com. And you know, we look forward to talking more and more sports with you guys. Thank you guys again for the support. Have a great evening.
Lay. Ever wonder when they would see the thunder?